sorry. I want to thank everybody for coming. Cold weather. I want to thank Rabbi Schrager for once again giving of his time. Without further ado, Parshas Yisro, Rabbi Murray Schrager.
Thank you. I typically start thinking about these things because I have big questions, and usually I don't get to answer the big ones, but along the way I answer small ones. So here's the big question, which I was hoping to develop methodology about, and I don't think I got to. The question is the following. We have a habit of thinking of the progression of the Torah narrative in terms of Parshat HaShavua. So we think about, you know, well, this is Yisro, and last week was Beshalach, so about a week has passed, you know, since Kriyas Yamsuf until Ma'amad Har Sinai, and then another week later, you know, we're going to start having some Mishpatim, and then another week we're going to build a base Mishkan, and we go back a few weeks, then we have, you know, Makos, and before that Yosef, and before that, you know, so on. And because of that, because we take a break in the narrative, pretty much, without any narrative at all, from this week, from Parshas Yisro, all the way through Vayikra, all the way through the beginning of Bamidbar, until like the 8th or 9th parak of Bamidbar. So because of that, we think that tremendous, tremendous time has passed, when in fact no time has passed at all. And because of that, there are a whole bunch of stories that appear at the very beginning, or not the very beginning, like the 7th, 8th, 9th parak of Bamidbar, which are repeats of stories that happen around now in Shmos. So last week you had the man, right? The people complained for food, they didn't have food, so Hashem makes this miracle of man. And in Bamidbar, again, we have the story of the man. And there it comes together with a slav, and here, in when it's told in Shmos, it's a much more positive story. In Bamidbar, it's a much more negative story. It ends with a plague and so on. That's one case. You have a second case of Moshe hitting the rock to get water. Again, we have it in Shmos, and it repeats again in Bamidbar. Again, in Shmos, it's a very positive story. Not much fanfare at all. People are thirsty, they want water, God shows that Moshe rocks, has hit the rock, he hits the rock, the water comes out, everybody's happy, end of story. And then of course, the same story is told in Bamidbar, but with much more unpleasant consequences. And Yisro, beginning of this week's Parsha, we have a long narrative, a whole perek, more than a parak actually, of Yisro coming to visit Moshe and all the things that went on with that. And then there's a very short piece in Bamidbar again, about Yisro. Although it's a very short piece. If you want to look at it in the Chumash, so everybody should have a Chumash that has both Shmos and Vayikra in it, or if you want just to look at the second source that I have here on the sheet, there's only four psukim on the piece in Bamidbar. I gave you the whole piece there. The piece in Shmos, I only gave you four selected psukim out of a much longer piece. But anyway, so the story of Yisro's appearance in the Machane Yisrael, and he and Moshe having a discussion about whether he should stay in the Machane Yisrael, and then his expressed interest in leaving the Machane Yisrael, so that, again, appears in Bamidbar. And so what I had hoped to think about was a more general question of, can we develop a methodology, or do the Rishonim, or does the Medrash, or does the Gemara, or whatever sources that we can marshal, have some sort of generalized methodology as to how to deal with these repetitive stories. So that I wasn't able to find. But I found some interesting things, I think, on the question specific to Yisro. Yisro, again, just to review the facts, if you look in Perek Yudchet, beginning of this week's Parsha, so he hears, right, by Yishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe Eiskol Asher Asa Elohim Moshe Li Yisrael Amo. He hears all the wonderful things that God has done for the Jews, specifically Ki Hoitzi Hashem Es Yisrael Mitzrayim, that God has taken them out of Egypt. Presumably, the Torah is assuming that we all remember the end of last week's Parsha. He heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. He heard about the Makos. He heard about the wonderful things that happened. If you look at Rashi, I didn't take this Rashi on my source sheet, but if you look at Rashi in your Chumash, so Rashi asks that question, Mashmu Hashemahu Ba, what was it that he heard. So Rashi's quoting the Medrash here. Kriyas Yamsuf u'milchemes Amalek. Those are the two items. The very end of this past week's Parsha, so that's why it fits together with the parak that came before it. Kriyas Yamsuf and milchemes Amalek. Fine. Okay, so Yisro hears about all these things, and he comes, and Moshe is glad to see him, either because he's just glad altogether, or because Yisro has come with his wife and two children, Moshe's wife and two children, Zipporah and Gershom and Eliezer. And they have a little party. Moshe takes them around the camp on a little tour. And then everybody's happy. Moshe tells them a whole story about more detail about things that happened as part of Geulat Mitzrayim. And then we have this long narrative about how Yisro gives Moshe advice about how to better do his legal system. Then at the end of that whole story, the very last pasuk, pasuk kav zayin, vayishlach Moshe et chotno, vayelech lo el arzo. Moshe sends his father-in-law, and he goes home. Okay, that's the story here. So Yisro comes, they have a very nice time together, they, you know, he gets some good advice, and off he goes. That's it. Then in Perek Yud of Bamidbar, Pasuk Chavtet and onward, so this you can either read in the Chumash or off of the sheet that I made. Different name, same guy, he's still Moshe's father-in-law. We're traveling to the place that God has promised to give us. Why don't you come along? We're going to be good to you. Because we're going to have good to share with you, because God's going to be good to us. He says, no, I'm not interested. Rather, I'd prefer to go home. Vayomer Moshe continues pressing him. Al na ta'azov otanu, please don't leave us. Ki al ken yadata chanotinu mibar vahidjelanu leinayim. We would prefer if you would stay with us, because you know our encampments and you can be eyes for us. Presumably that refers to some kind of scouting that Yisro was going to be able to do for them. And whatever it is that God does good for us, is sort of repeating what he said before, we'll be happy to share that good with you. Yeah.
Scouting that Yisro could do would be, I would imagine, with Midian.
Right, which is hard to understand at this point because they're past Midian. They're now, you know, much closer to Israel. Well, we don't know exactly, actually. Presumably, this is they're at Har Chorev. If you look back at the very beginning, Sefer Shmos, right? So Har HaElokim was right outside of where Yisro had his encampment with his family and the Binyanites, right? That was the whole relationship between Har HaElokim and Moshe to begin with. That's how he stumbled upon the place. You're already at Midian. They're moving on past that.
Not Har Sinai.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying that they're now moving out to go to Israel.
Where's Midian?
Presumably someplace in the middle of the Sinai Desert. Or at least that's where Yisro and his group were. Anyway, so the problem here is that it's not clear whether this is a separate story, whether in our Parsha Yisro comes and goes home, and then in Bamidbar, in Bahaloscha, he comes back. It's also not clear whether when he comes back and he expresses this desire to leave, whether Moshe convinces him or not to stay. And it may be it's really the same story. Maybe it's the same story being told from two different perspectives or two different parts of it relevant to the two issues that the surrounding parshiot are interested in. So in our case, the point was to focus, presumably, on Yisro's getting all excited about the various things that had happened in last week's parsha. So that's the main issue as far as we're concerned. And then he can exit the scene. Whereas, in the case of Perek Yud of Bamidbar, there the point is the big play-up of the Jews getting all excited and going toward Eretz Yisrael, and then you have the Vayehi Ben Soa Haron and so on. So it was the great excitement, which is then broken down by the Mitonanim and all the various complaints and the downward spiral of the rest of Bamidbar. So it could be that the Torah is using the same story, but for different purposes each time. Now, the question of how to understand the two sides of this story, or if it's two different stories, you can take a look at a little bit in the words of the Rishonim that are dealing with it right at the beginning here. If you look at Rashi, for example, I quoted two Rashis here, one from Shmos and one from Bamidbar. So at the very last Pasuk in our section, in Pasuk Kavzayin, so Torah says, Vayelech lo el artso, Yisro returns home. Why, says Rashi, v'gayer b'nei mishpachto, to convert his family. Why does he want to convert his family? So presumably, Rashi is thinking along the following lines. He's thinking that Yisro has no particular reason that he states here in our section about why he wants to go back. He just says he does. He doesn't say that he wants to go back as opposed to staying with the Jewish people. So then presumably Rashi says, well, maybe he's going back, and the going back is the temporary thing, not the being with Moshe is the temporary thing. And therefore, why is he going back? He's going back to get the rest of his family. Why does he need to get the rest of his family? In order that he can be Megayer them, and then they can join the Jewish people. Now, this point of Yisro interested in being converted and joining the Jewish people is going to be an issue that I want you to keep sort of in the back of your minds, because the very notion of giyur, the very notion of converting to Judaism, is something that doesn't exist prior to Matan Torah. Prior to Matan Torah, Judaism is not a religion. Judaism is a nation only. With the Torah, become religion. You can't convert to a nation. You can naturalize, maybe, to become a part of a nation. Like somebody wants to become an American citizen, so there's a naturalization process. But as far as giur, as far as conversion, so that's accepting some kind of body of faith, which the Jews didn't really have until Matan Torah. So because of that, it's hard to understand why Yisro would be interested in converting if conversion at this point in Jewish history really was necessary.
Let me ask a question. Don't we have a question by Hagar, whether she was a mitzvah or she converted? Now, if she didn't convert, then Yishmael wasn't even a Jew. So why would Sarah be worried? Ki lo yirash ben hash.
At the risk of upsetting you, I don't think that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were Jewish either. I don't think that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were Jewish either.
They were Jews.
They weren't Jews. They were proto-Jews. There were no Jews until Ma'amad Har-Sinai. There was no such thing as Judaism until Ma'amad Har-Sinai. All there was B'nai Yisrael, or B'nai Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The notion of Jews as a faith community, as a religion, as a people, I don't think exists in the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. For example, Asher had a daughter, right, named Serach bat Asher. Okay. If somehow Serach bat Asher would step into a time machine.
If she was what?
Step into a time machine and would appear right here next to me in shul. Yeah. And she's still single. We have no evidence from the Torah that she got married, right? So she's still single. Okay? And for argument's sake, she's my son's great, 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 great aunt. And you're allowed by the Torah to marry your aunt, right? Right? I would not let my son marry her without conversion. Why? Because I don't think she's Jewish. Yes, she's the daughter of Asher. She's the daughter of Yaakov. She's the granddaughter of Yitzhak, the great-granddaughter of Avraham Avinu. Don't make her Jewish. Judaism happens through either with your mother was Jewish, which in those cases nobody was, or conversion. Conversion happened at Ma'amad Har-Sinai. They did Kabbalah Mitzvos. There was a karban, and they sprinkled the blood on everybody. There was a whole conversion process. So prior to that, there's no Jews as far as I'm concerned. So that being the case, it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me at all that Hagar was a mitzris or not a mitzris. Her becoming part of Avraham's family was just that. Just that. He came she came to live with his family as a gift presumably from the Egyptian people. That's it.
So why did Yaakov suffer Rachel's death because he married two sisters? If he wasn't a Jew, he wasn't a Chuz.
Ah, that's a different question. The Avos, we believe, kept the Torah intuitively. They didn't have it written for them. Nobody told them what the Torah was. But Avraham sort of intuited what the Torah was and attempted as much as he could to keep it. I mean, the Gemara goes so far as to say that he kept even Derabbanans, even, what do we say, Erev Tavshilin, I think, that Avraham kept. But presumably all of that was by intuition. It wasn't because he was Mitzuveh Ve'oseh. The reason why Yaakov, according to this Medrash, couldn't be married and live in Israel to two sisters is because they understood. They, Avraham and his family, understood that it was the nature of the land of Israel to be, you couldn't live there if you wanted to be according to their community without obeying the Torah. The Torah that they believed, they hadn't seen one yet, but they believed that the Torah prohibited the marriage of one man to two sisters. Therefore, if they're going to live in Israel, which they're about to do, so therefore Yaakov needed to get rid of either Rachel or Leah for his convenience, so Hashem kills off Rachel. Yeah.
I was looking at Pesukim. How do you know even that from Pesukim that Yisro wanted to be Magaya?
You don't. We don't. Not at all. All we do know is that he expresses a lot of excitement and that he's a big fan of all of the things that God has done, and he compliments God over having done it, right? He says, this is in... Right, exactly. Correct. Very good. He said, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Yisro, Baruch Hashem, Asher Hitzil Aslam Yad Mitzrayim Yad Paro, Asher Hitzil Sa'am Yitachas Yad Mitzrayim. So that's, you know, that's about as good as we do on Pesach at night, right? So, which is, you know, the quintessential Jewish experience. Anyway, but Rashi, my point here is about Legayer B'nei Mishpachto, is that when he leaves here, he's doing so with intent to return. That's really my point. And therefore, presumably, it's because Rashi sees the second story as not the same as the first. Meaning, Yisro leaves, Yisro does his business back at home, he brings his people back here to join the Jewish people, and then the second story happens, where again he has misgivings over whether he wants to remain with the Jews or not. Moshe convinces him to stay, and we all live happily ever after. So if you look at the Rashi in Bamidbar, so this is Rashi Perek Yud in Bamidbar, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Al Na Ta'azov, Moshe is begging him not to leave. Ein na, says Rashi, Ela Lashon Bakasha. Whenever you see the word na, it always means please, or you're being begging. Savur Haya, because what happened? Because Yisro realized, Sheyesh Legerim, so excuse me, he didn't realize, he thought, Sheyesh Gerim Legerim, Chelek Baharetz, that non-Jews who joined the community of Israel should also get a piece of the inheritance of the land of Israel. Achshav, now at that point, Shira'ah she'ein lahem chelek, he nicham v'halachlo. When he discovered that he was going to have to be, you know, a businessman or something having not to do with the earth, so then he no longer had any interest in being Jewish and he leaves. So again, we see Rashi separating two stories out. Each one happens sequentially. Fine. Let's look at Ramban now. Now Ramban, this is back in Shemos. He says, I didn't give you the whole Ramban here, just a little piece of it. She'amar Khan, here in our story where it says, Vayishlach Moshe et chotno vayelech lo el artzo, and he went home. Shehaya ze b'shana harishona. Ramban thinks this is during the first year after the Jews left Egypt. V'halach lo el artzo v'chazar elav. And just like Rashi said, he went home and he came back. Then the tachain, he says it might be, shehalach sham legayer et mishpachto. Again, what Rashi said, that he went home to go collect his family and bring them back and convert them to Judaism. V'chazar le Moshe. And he came back to Moshe, v'odenu b'har Sinai, and All this time that he went home and he collected his family, came back, all of it was all while the Jews were still sitting at Har Sinai, which is not so surprising if you think about it, because the Jews camped at Har Sinai for a full year. They got there right before Matan Torah in Sivan of year one after the Exodus, and they stayed there until the spring of year two after the Exodus. If you read the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, so it says that they started moving in Iyar of that second year. So, and in a year, it shouldn't be hard for Yisro to come there and come back. Why? Ki karovu l'Midyan. Because, after all, we know that Har Sinai is very close to Midyan. That was what we were talking about before. Kimoshi is kartani. Sheharei b'nesoa hamachane b'iyar b'shana hashniya. Because when the people started moving in Iyar of the second year, kisha amarlo Moshe, as Moshe said to Yisro, right? Nosim anachnu lecha itanu. We're going, so come along with us. Ve'anauto, and at that point, Yisro says, lo eilech hi'im el artzi v'el molatati eilech. I want to go home. Then hitchanein lo Moshe ma'od. Then Moshe really begged him a lot. The Amarlo al na tazovotanu, which we saw already. The Aita anu leinayim. The Hayaki tilechim anu vayatova hu asher itav Hashem imanu veitivu lach, and so on. The lo heishiv oto davar, and we don't have any recorded response from Yitro to Moshe's argument. Therefore, says Ramban, whoever gets the last word presumably wins. V'nir e shikibel devarav v'asak yirtzono v'lo azavam. That indeed he agreed with Moshe's point, and therefore he did what Moshe wanted, and he did not leave. Okay? So basically it's the same as Rashi, except for the very end. Two stories, sequential. First one happens now at the beginning of our Parsha. Second one happens in June when we read Parshat Behalotcha. And there are two separate stories, and they end happily. Yes.
Is there machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban?
Only at the very end, as to whether Yisro in the end decided to stay with the Jews or not.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
The first time they agree, he went back to his home. But the second time, Rashi says he went back to his home.
Right, correct.
Because Ein Lo Chela.
Correct. He was fed up because he wasn't going to get land.
And Ramban says, no, he's dead.
Correct. Yes. And by the way, assuming that we're to take the Medrash's word for it, that when we find various people described later on in the Nach as Keni, that refers to Yisro's descendants, so then we do find that there are Keni who are living among the Jews. For example, the area of Yericho was populated by this group called Chever HaKeni. If you remember, when Shaul attacked the Amaleki, so they were mixed in with a bunch of Keni that Shaul said, we have no quarrel with you guys, you know, you separate yourselves out from Amalek and so on. That was last week's Haftorah. So, right? Yeah. Okay, so anyway, that's the Rashi and the Ramban. Now, the Gemara and Zvachim, next piece I have there on the sheet, entertains another possibility. Itmar. Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Chad amar Yitro kodem matan Torah haya. One learns the sequence of events the way we have it written in the Parsha. Namely, Yitro comes and visits Moshe prior to matan Torah. V'chad amar Yitro achar matan Torah haya. That in fact, the Torah is not telling us the events in chronological order. And how would that therefore play out? Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan, Mashmua Shema Uba Venitgayer. This is exactly what Rashi was quoting at that first Rashi on Pasuk Aleph. What was it therefore that Yisro heard that made him want to come and become Jewish? So Rabbi Shua Omer Milchemet Amalek Shema. Rabbi Shua says it's because of the war with Amalek. That's what he heard. Sheharei Ktiv Bitzido, because after all, the Pasuk says, Vayachalosh Yoshua Amalek Dedamol Licharev. That's the last Pasuk in last week's Parsha. And then immediately Vayishma Yidro. So it makes sense if you're assuming that everything happens chronologically, that the next narrative is because of the one before it. However, Rabbi Lezer Hamoda Iomer Matan Torah Shema Uba. Rather, no. He says that the reason why Yisro came is because he heard about Matan Torah. Because the moment of the Torah giving was accompanied by a lot of loud noise, right? Kolot uvrakim, v'anarim, kaved ma'od, and so on. So that tremendous noise was heard all over the world, and therefore, according to the Gemara, according to Rabbi Elazar Modai, Yisro was curious about what the source of the noise was, and so he followed it, like we all like to follow fire engines, and that's why he came to Har Sinai to discover what indeed had happened. Okay, now, this idea, namely, that the proper sequence of events is to put Har Sinai prior to Yisro, not the way it's written in the Torah, is a very interesting issue. It's part of a much more general issue, which is Ein Mukdam U'Mechar Torah, that the Torah is not necessarily always in chronological order. Now that idea is itself a Machlokes Rishonim, meaning, yes, the Torah in certain cases must not be in chronological order. There are various places in the Torah where clearly it's not being in chronological order. The Gemara, for example, the beginning of Pesachim has a point about Pesach Sheni. The discussion, actually, right near this piece in Bamidbar that we're reading, talks about Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni was an issue the second year after they left Egypt. God tells them, okay guys, we're in the desert, let's all observe Pesach. And that's obviously in Chodesh Nisan, it's the first month of the second year. And that appears in, I think, Perek Chet of Bamidbar. But Perek Aleph of Bamidbar, the very first Pasuk of Bamidbar, says that when is all that happening? When is Sefer Bamidbar happening? So it says Be'echad l'chodesh hashini, right? The first day of the second month. Second month is Iyar, right? Pasuk says Vayidber Hashem Moshe b'Midbar Sinai b'Yom Moed Be'echad l'chodesh hashini, on the first day of the second month. Well, the second month comes, the second month comes after the first month, but Perek Aleph comes before Perek Chet. So therefore, there are certain cases in the Torah, that's the one that the Gemara points out, but there are others, that clearly the Torah is written out of chronological order. My particular favorite is the very end of Parshat Noach, that's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, where we first meet Avraham and his family. So it says there that it was guy Terach, and Terach had three sons, right? Haran, Nahor, and went missing, and Avraham, right? And that they lived for a various number of years, and then Terach died in Haran. Okay, and then the next pasuk is Lech Lecha, and God talks to Avraham and tells him to go to Israel. Fine. But if you do the math, you'll find out that Terach lived for many, many, many years after Avraham left for Israel. So why does the Torah kill him off prematurely? Because, the Rashi there says, because we feel bad on Avraham's behalf that he should be accused of leaving behind his old father making Aliyah. You know, all of us want to make Aliyah, but we have all our parents and in-laws to take care of. So Avraham also had that situation and didn't care, went to Israel anyway. So lest Avraham be accused of not taking good care of his parents and in-laws. So therefore, the Torah kills them off prior to Lech Lecha, even though chronologically it happened later. That's one example, and there are various others. So the Torah, in certain cases, clearly is not written in chronological order. Fine. That's a mukdam u'mukhar b'Torah. The question is, can you use that as a tool to solve difficult narratives in Chumash? Meaning, if there's a narrative that seems out of place to you, can you solve that out of placeness by saying, well, because it didn't really happen now, I want to move it to a more convenient time period because the rule is Ein Mukdam U'Mechar B'Torah. So, for example, Ibn Ezra has that attitude and moves the narratives around every once in a while to solve thematic problems that he has. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says that if the text obligates you to say that the Torah is written out of chronological order, okay, fine. Then we can rely on that Gemara, and we don't have to feel bad about the Torah being out of order. But those cases, those small number of cases aside, we should assume that the Torah is written in chronological order, and therefore, if we have a problem in the text, solve the problem in some other way. Okay. So, now in our issue, in our parak of Perek Yud-Chet here, there are a number of problems in the text which make it tempting to suggest that all of this happened after Matan Torah. So I'll give you some of the ones that the Ibn Ezra points out. Actually, let's look at what the Ibn Ezra himself says first. So I have the Ibn Ezra's second to last box on the bottom here. Ibn Ezra says, Vayishma Yisro, when did all this happen? Yisro ba el Moshe achar shebana ha-mishkan. Not only after Matan Torah, but all the way at the end, after all the stories, or all the mitzvot that we find, all the way until the end of Sefer Shmos. Ki, yesh demut ra'ayot she'amar ha-katu. There are various proofs that I can show you this from the text. Pasuk says, for example, le'echo lechem im chosein Moshe lifnei ha-elokim. It says that he, Yisro, and Moshe came to eat in front of God. Ve'amar Moshe v'sefer el ha'dvarim. And later on, when Moshe recounts the story, as he does so many other stories in Devarim, Shamar Hashem le'Moshe, Rav lachem shevet bahar hazeh ve'amar alechem ba'id ahi v'atein etam Roshim alechem sarei alafim, and so on. That whole story about appointing judges. So that happens here in Perek Yud-Chet based on Yisro's suggestion. Over there, in when it's retold in Sefer Devarim, that doesn't happen until much later. Similarly, v'lonu chalomar, it's hard to say, ki hitakev Yitro im Yisrael charashim rabim, that Yisro hung out with the Jews for a long time, for many months, ve'achar keina tan lahem ha'itza, and then first he gave Moshe the suggestion about dividing up the judgeship. Because the pasuk says it was the next day. So gam yoreh al yosher zeha perush. That would seem to indicate that this makes sense. She'amar Moshe lechovev shehu lefi da'ati Yitro. That when Moshe in Sefer Bamidbar, when he's talking to Chovev, his father-in-law, who presumably is the same guy, Kashira Faresh Bim Komo, as I'll explain to you when we get to Bamidbar, Nos Imanachnu, the Ode, Vahuratani, Chukeha Elokim. This is my favorite proof of the Ibn Ezra's. When Yisro asks Moshe, what in the world are you doing? These people are lined up, you know, asking you questions all day and all night. You're going to have a nervous breakdown. You got to lighten your load. So Moshe explains to them, to me. So he says, because the people are coming to me to hear Chukei HaElokim, the laws of God. V'lo yitachein kodem Matan Torah. How in the world does Moshe know the laws of God if Matan Torah hasn't happened yet? Right? When Moshe went up to Har Sinai for Matan Torah and he spends 40 days and 40 nights learning Torah with God and presumably covers the whole corpus of Jewish law. So okay, he comes down from the mountain. He's now the single repository of Chukei HaElokim. So it makes sense that people who want to know what God thinks should come and ask him.
But
okay.
What about
Mora? Ah, great question. So I also thought about this. I was discussing this morning with somebody, made the same suggestion to me. We know, right, at Mara, that God, instructed... Exactly. Sham, sam, lo, chok, u, mishpat. So we do have, that's correct, already at the end of last week's Parsha, some, we don't know exactly what chok, u, mishpat actually is, but it would be possible to argue against this Ibn Ezra and to say, no, Moshe did have some experience of Chukei HaElokim prior to Matan Torah, namely at Marah. Very good. Yes, you could say that against Ibn Ezra. Yes, that's true. Yeah, except that presumably the things that people are coming to Moshe to decide is civil law. You got to think that that's, you know, the stuff that... It sounds like Mishpatim, stuff that we would, you know, wait for next week's Parsha to hear. And so, but it says Choku Mishpat, right, at Marah. So you're right, that's a good point. But the Ibn Ezra thinks that that the sort of laws that the people are coming to Moshe for are things that he would not have known prior to Matan Torah, and therefore he says, V'lod ha-parasha, davka im parashat vayivo amalek. The only reason why the Torah puts this story of Yisro here is lehafrish bein ma'aseh zeh v'zeh, in order to separate the story of Amalek from the story of Matan Torah, because Amalek is bad news and the Torah is good news, and it's not nice to have the two of those together. So he put a little what do they call it in Shakespeare? I don't know, when they have a separation and somebody tells a joke in the middle. So here, thank you very much. Okay, right. Comic relief. So, yeah. So so that's, according to the Ibn Ezra, the purpose of Perek Yudchet. Now, the Ramban, which I didn't quote for you, the Ramban is very, very, very long, quotes all of the Ibn Ezra's proofs and deflects them all, one after another, and says none of that is sufficient cause to move Parsha Yitro sequentially into Sefer Bamidbar. But before I get to that, let's point out the benefits of the Ibn Ezra's point, and also what it does to the question that I started with. The Ibn Ezra, by moving the story after the construction of the Mishkan, ends up moving it to exactly the place where we find the second Yisro story. Right? Because if we're going to assume that there isn't any narrative, there basically isn't any narrative in all of Sefer Vayikra, and the second Yisro story occurs right at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, and the Ibn Ezra is telling us that the story happens really at the end of the construction of the Mishkan, so then that unifies the whole thing very nicely. Very nicely. So at that is tempting from my point of view, because clearly Ibn Ezra wants to unify the story. Neither story is complete. The two stories, if you combine them, fit together nicely. And if that is indeed the case, so then we know Yisro's answer to Moshe's appeal to please stay. The answer is provided at the end of our version of the story, which is, sorry, he goes home, right? Vayishlach lo el artzo. So so that's a convenient point by the Ibn Ezra. The last thing I wanted to point out is that if the Ibn Ezra is right, namely, that Parshat Yitro follows Matan Torah, you really have to feel for Moshe Rabbeinu. Here's why. Matan Torah is the highlight of his career, right? It's his, you know, it's his grand opening on the Broadway stage. And if I were Moshe Rabbeinu, I'd want my family to be there to see it, right? I'd want my family to be there to see it. And here, his wife and his kids come to meet him after Matan Torah. Can you imagine the highlight of his life? Standing there, talking face to face with God, receiving the Torah, all the theatrics, all the lightning and thunder and everything, and his family missed the whole thing. So that's just me. The Chizkuni points out something else, which I think is equally interesting, and has certain other fallout, which I want to show you here. Says the Chizkuni, Yesh Mefarshim, there are those who say, they call parsha mi vayishma Yisro ad vayilech lo el artzo le'achar matan Torah, namely the Ibn Ezra and the one side of the machlokas in the Gemara in Zvachim. V'chein ha'perush, and how do you explain that? Vayavo Yisro means be'asara b'tishrei. Yisro came on the 10th of Tishrei. He came on Yom Kippur. Shebo yarad Moshe minahar. That was the day that Moshe came down with the second luchot. The agav grara, and along the way, the yitziat Mitzrayim, the asik ba, because we are talking about yitziat Mitzrayim here in Perek Yudchet in Shmot, that's why nakta leparsha Yitro hacha. That's the only reason why it was recorded here. Mishum d'afhi kamitchalav aska b'yitziat Mitzrayim, because Yisro also, that story also begins with a discussion of how happy he was over yitziat Mitzrayim. The al yedei shehigo merit veholechet b'inyanei haTorah, and since the end of that story is about Torah issues, namely helping Moshe figure out how to paskin halacha for the Jewish people. Therefore, v'dinin kidei lechaberna le parshat matan Torah. So its beginning fits in with the end of Bishach. Its end fits in nicely with the next parak. So therefore, it works out to put it here. That's why we stick it in over here. And it comes out that that ends. Fine. Fine. Ulafishi does. This is the part that I found really interesting. Sarich lomar, you'll have to say that Gershom the Eliezer lo amdu al har Sinai. They, as I just said before, they missed the big show. They missed the har Sinai. The af al pi she'ein rayal adavar, even though, says Chizkuni, I have no proof that they were or were not at har Sinai. I can't prove it one way or the other. However, zecher ledavar. He says, I have a hint. What's the hint? Shelo huskuru mikan ve'elach v'shum makom batorah. They are not mentioned. Gershom and Eliezer are never again mentioned in the Torah. Now, let's think about that for a second. We go to great lengths, we the Jewish people, go to great lengths to put all of us at Har Sinai. Right? All of us. We believe that every single one of us stood at Har Sinai when the Torah was given. Why? Why is it so important to us? So I assume the reason is because we believe that nobody should be under any obligation to be shomer Torah mitzvos unless you volunteered to do so. Right? So if we all stood at Har Sinai and we all said Na'aseh v'nishma together with the 3 million Jews or however many who were alive at the time, so okay, who obligated me to all do all these weird things that Torah demands of us? I did. I took it upon myself. Okay, well then, you know, I'm stuck. So that's important to us because we want every Jew to feel that he's not something that you have to do this just because you happen to have been born into a Jewish family. No, you were there, you agreed to do it. Well, there are only 3 Jews in the entire history of the universe who missed Har Sinai: Tzipporah, Gershom, and Eliezer. So Chizkuni says, yeah, and I'll tell you how I know that they blew it. The way I know they blew it is because they weren't Jews after that. They were lost to the Jewish people. Lost. So it makes sense, he says, and I think there's a spiritual sort of sensibility to that, namely that having missed Matan Torah meant, either from the halachic view that I was telling you before about how I believe that there were no Jews prior to Matan Torah, because that was a conversion process, which they missed, and the fact that because they never said Na'aseh v'nishma, so they never were really obligated anyway. I heard today, I have no independent verification of this, somebody told me that the Rav was once asked this question. Rabbi Soloveitchik was once asked, if indeed the Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni are right, and if indeed Gershom and Eliezer weren't at Ma'amar Har Sinai, so then they're not Jews, right? So Rav thought about it for a second and says, it must be that they must have converted later on. Okay, so that was the Rav's solution, if indeed that's what happened. I like the Chizkunis better. Namely, they disappeared. That lacking that visceral attachment that we all have to Torah mitzvot because of our presence standing at Har Sinai, so that's what makes us Jews, that's what drives us, that's what encourages us and gives us motivation to do mitzvot. Absent that, we're lost. Anyway, I think that's a nice message. Have a lovely Shabbos.
Thank you very much. Next week is Rabbi Hartstock, then I believe Mrs. Kahan, and then Rabbi Eli Rubin.